Some of you might have had a short work week this past week. Maybe federal employees. I don't know. Not too many people still have Columbus Day automatically off. Like Columbus doesn't carry the clout that he used to. Last week, Reverend Kathleen was talking about the fictional character Atticus Finch from To Kill a Mockingbird and was describing about how our iconic historical heroes or fictional heroes can get knocked off their pedestals by new growth, new research, new understandings. And when that happens, we have to let them go. In the days before we realized how all of our Western history had been written from a European point of view, I was a big fan in grade school growing up studying the seafaring explorers. I loved them. My Icelandic heritage had gotten me interested in the Vikings early on, and that carried over to the European seafaring explorers like Columbus or Magellan. But after my public schooling was long over, we began to find more substantial truth-telling in our textbooks about the cruelty, the greed, the illness, the slavery, and the exploitation that followed the Vikings and the European explorers around the globe like they were their rabid pets, biting everyone they came into contact with. Columbus seems to have been the iconic explorer hero who suffered the biggest fall in recent decades, because maybe he was on the highest pedestal. He was the discoverer of America, after all, although we Icelanders knew better than that. He was, of course, also the favorite son of our important Italian-American community. Our modern historians have recognized the tragic consequences for the indigenous people who lived in the Americas of being discovered by Europeans. And though many other explorers and settlers contributed to these consequences, Columbus gets to take the blame. And these days, many of us, even Italian Americans, pass through mid-October without paying much attention to Columbus Day. Heroes, cultural heroes, get let go often not by massive controversial rejection, but simply by fading out of our consciousness as their meaning to us changes. But some aspects of the European settlement of North America remain embedded in our culture, so that even when the representative heroes have faded, long-standing attitudes that they represent have not. Entitlement is one of those attitudes. When Europeans came to Africa and to the Americas, they carried with them lots of baggage, and it wasn't all food and ammunition. They brought spiritual baggage as well, doctrinal baggage, insofar as many of them believed that they were the messengers and representatives of God, of the Christian God and of God's divinely appointed rulers on earth, the crowned heads of Europe. So during the Age of Exploration, it was actually the Vatican that helped adjudicate disputes that arose between countries about who would be entitled to the land and resources that were being claimed on other continents. And they helped broker European legal agreements between countries that declared that the Europeans who had gotten there first were entitled to claim those resources. This was legal doctrine was called the Doctrine of Discovery. And it actually found its way into American law and has been used to reject the claims of North American Aboriginal tribes to land and resources that were theirs before European colonization. Now, I first learned about this obscure doctrine of discovery because Unitarian Universalists were being encouraged to repudiate this legal standard in our jurisprudence through a voted resolution a few years ago at our General Assembly. And when I learned about it, I thought to myself, wow, this law really gives the word discovery a bad name. It really should be called the doctrine of entitlement. Entitlement means you are owed something because of an identity that you carry. But we all now know now that, of course, nobody discovered America. Rather, a lot of European powers sailed to it, essentially stole it, and claimed it as their own. And the point of this historical excursion is this: entitlement has been built in to the culture of this country from its earliest beginnings. It's been a powerful attitude that shaped us. The belief that Christian people were divinely entitled and that white people were racially entitled to various privileges, rights, wealth, and power has been a driving force in American identity. So we're now in a period of world history in which we're intensely aware that these kinds of imperialist, colonialist assumptions that influenced the age of exploration and the industrial age that followed it have been overturned. Today's progressives, wherever they may live in the world, question and challenge assumptions of entitlement by any one religious, racial, or cultural group or another. Even at the same time as we see various fundamentalisms in religion and in politics threaten the multicultural world of mutual respect and coexistence that has been such an important ideal for both political and religious liberalism. Today, I want to contrast these reflections on entitlement with some thoughts about a different kind of doctrine of discovery. A liberal religious doctrine of discovery that influences our own spiritual lives and that can shape our actions in the world to fight against the fundamentalisms that are destroying civilizations, social contracts, and human decency. I use that word doctrine cautiously, knowing it's a word that we Unitarian Universalists don't like very much, and in fact, we'll claim that we're a religion without doctrines. But I looked it up, and, you know, the synonym for the word doctrine is a word that we do use a lot, the word principle. A doctrine is a principle or teaching that's advocated for acceptance by a body of people, usually a religion, but also maybe a government. So our seven principles in Unitarian Universalism are a kind of doctrine. We don't enforce belief in our principles, however, through spiritual threats or punishments. You're not required when you join the fellowship to sign a statement saying that you will uphold and believe in these. But we make sure that you understand that they represent a place where we stand together with congregations all across the continent. The fact that we don't enforce our principles is where the discovery part of our approach to doctrine comes from. Our seven principles are a framework for self-discovery in community. We contend that our way of being religious works best when people have the freedom to realize and to practice the truth of our teachings for themselves without oversight, regulation, and enforcement. We have a doctrine of discovery when it comes to religion, but it's exactly the opposite of this legal doctrine of discovery that has been used as a tool of oppression and exploitation. Our doctrine of discovery is based not on entitlement, but on its opposite. And the opposite of entitlement is giving. There is a difference between living your life with expectations of entitlement as opposed to intentions based on giving. And it's a journey of a lifetime to truly unpack that difference in your life between feeling entitled and giving. To what are we entitled as human beings, and how are we entitled? You know, our Unitarian Universalist approach to religion has answered this important question in a unique and difficult way by refusing to presume or prescribe the existence of a God or any other form of transcendent authority as necessary support for any basic entitlements that come with being human. That is a leap of faith that we took when we refused to splinter and dissolve more than 100 years ago, when enough people in our congregations started to ask the question of whether belief in God had to be mandatory to be a Unitarian or a Universalist. Now, unfortunately, there are people who look at us from the outside in today who will come away with the impression that it's mandatory in Unitarian Universalism not to believe in God. But we know that that isn't true either. Letting go of mandatory belief, starting more than a century ago in our congregations, was, I think, the beginning of our doctrine of discovery. We hadn't articulated our seven principles back then, and our Unitarian and Universalist denominations hadn't merged. But in both traditions, when we let go of our mandatory identity as Christians and a mandatory identity as theists, we were left with a big question hanging over us, a what now question. If belief isn't compulsory, what are the sources of authority that you turn to for building your own theology? The answer to that question back then, as now, is that you have to choose to work with sources of authority that you find in your own heart and within the conversation of community. If you are a person with a Christian theist identity and belief within Unitarian Universalism, as is my wife, you have to claim that, realize it, explore it, affirm it, even if the minister doesn't, even if you might feel yourself to be in a minority. And if you're clear that you're not a theist, you have to answer questions like, so why is there something instead of nothing? Where do my ethical commitments come from? What does mystical experience that so many people seem to have mean to me? Being a non-theist is challenging spiritual work, if you take it seriously. And being part of a religious community that requires your personal journey of discovery about why and what you believe is demanding for everyone, wherever you are on the spectrum of understanding among us. I love what David White said in the poem. Sometimes everything has to be inscribed across the heavens so that you can find the one line already inside you. There is so much baggage that we bring into the world as we begin our lives, the baggage of our genetic or our cultural lineage, our racial heritage, the circumstances of history into which we've been born. We can feel entitled by all those givens. If we were born with white skin, we can unconsciously expect the privileges that come with whiteness. If we were born into a particular ethnic or cultural tradition, we can be told that we're expected to carry the traits of that group. All of the various assumptions that we grow up with about the way the world is seem to be inscribed across the heavens. And finding the personal truth that is inside you and daring to speak it out loud against all of those givens written in the sky is not an easy thing. Sometimes the poet says, it takes a great sky to find that first bright and indescribable wedge of freedom in your own heart. Isn't that what we try to create in this fellowship? That great sky that invites you to discover and speak the lines from your own heart. It's our journey of discovery. It's finding your way to say yes to life. But here is one of the hardest parts about my own experience of Unitarian Universalist faithful living. I've come to the conclusion that life itself doesn't offer me any inherent entitlements, guarantees, or interventions. If I use a word like God, as I did today in prayer or in poetry, I'm not speaking of a reality that I experience that gives me anything Rather, it is a reality that is asking me to do the giving. This is especially something that I find to be true when it comes to our first principle in Unitarian Universalism that still reads this way: we affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person. I wish that language was stronger and made no presumptions that life, the spirit of life, gives us anything that we don't have to create for ourselves and with each other. I actually wish our first principle read, we create and promote the worth and dignity of every person. Because I think that's what really happens. Worth and dignity of human beings exists in this world because we create and sustain it by our own beliefs and attitudes and behaviors. And if there was one thing I would have us let go of in Unitarian Universalism, it would be that idea that worth and dignity are inherent, apart from the ways that human community affirms them. Worth and dignity are not entitlements. They're not inherent. They're the gift that we give to each other each and every day. And we see all over the world every day that they are gifts that can be taken away, set aside, or forgotten. The social contract that we have in this country says that we will share our collective resources to sustain a decent standard of living for those who lack the resources to create it for themselves. It's one of the ways that we have agreed together to create worth and dignity in the world. So I find it so ironic and maddening that the popular media and social conservatives call the programs created by government as gifts that enhance worth and dignity entitlement programs. The real entitlement programs in this country are actually low taxation rates on inherited wealth and capital gains, the deregulation of super PACs, and built-in access to lawyers and politicians that comes with wealth. There is a relationship between the rankism that the Broussards described in the first reading we heard today that is wearing away the fabric of our common life and our political process in this country, and the fundamentalisms that we see expressed globally through ideological military warfare. Both of them are based on a belief that one group of people is entitled over another, whether that is one group of believers, one racial group, or one social class. The consequences of people acting out of these entitlement beliefs are devastating. Unitarian Universalism has a different answer. We have each and all been given the indescribably valuable gift of being alive in this time in human history, when the resources and the wisdom that are available to us are more extensive than any group of human beings have ever known. And it is we who must take up the challenge of using this gift that we have been given wisely by returning it to each other in recognition of our mutual worth and dignity and in service to the common good. May it be so.